The Blind Spot with Rebecca Skeet and Tiffany Martin. Hello, hello. Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Beck. R-E-B-E-K to the A-H. I was like, can I fit that in there? And I think I did.
I mean, shoehorn, but I mean, it's there.
Listen.
It's there.
It still fits. Well, hello. My name is Rebecca Skeet.
And I am Simply Tiff. Yes, like the orange juice. And if you would like to sponsor us, we would love to drink your product.
We already do. So it wouldn't be too far of a stretch. Except I will feel more energized to stretch if I did have... Okay, I'm done.
Hashtag Simply. Orange.
Simply the best. Rest in peace, Tina Turner. All right. So quick shout out to all of our new listeners, which since this is a new podcast, would be everybody. Hello. So glad you're here. Thanks for joining. Welcome to the ride. Strap in. For a brief recap as to what The Blind Spot is about, I'm going to kick it to my co-host here, Tiffany, to kind of fill you in.
The Blind Spot, all puns intended, because I am completely blind, but it's not about me. It's about us and us sharing our knowledge in our respective fields. But also, we just having conversation, just talking about life and all of its facets. And at the end, we like to give you a tool. And that tool can help you within the tech space, because that is kind of where we're going. We are in the fourth industrial revolution. And that just means that we are in a world right now that tech is moving everywhere. And it's we just want to make sure that you're staying on top of things and that you're getting it from a trusted source. So, yeah.
And just to hit you on, or not hit you, violence is not the answer. To double tap on the blind spot. When we met and at the Dallas Business Journal, and we'll talk more about that in future episodes. One of the things that stuck out to me about the speech that you gave was, just because you lost your sight doesn't mean that you don't have vision. And a lot of the things that we discuss just generally in organic conversations, there are so many things that you illuminate for me. There are things that are blind spots that I have had that have been identified in conversations that we've had, and that we don't just talk about what we might have missed or what we might have overlooked. We then take actionable steps as to what we can do to address it. And so while we're doing those things for ourselves, you're like, hey, let's benefit other folks as well. So you're welcome, everyone. You get to benefit from this conversation.
But that really is a great, great segue in, like, you know, what we find for ourselves and what we do. The whole, you know, I might have lost my sight, but I didn't lose my vision, is really what goes into our topic for today, which is high agency, and where we got the whole MacBook and a mic idea from. So I'll pass that back to you.
Very kind. Thank you. And I will accept it. So high agency, what does that mean? High agency was coined in 2016 when Eric Weinstein, then the managing director of Peter Thiel's investment firm, referenced it during an appearance on a podcast hosted by the self-help guru Tim Ferriss. In Weinstein's formulation, a high agency approach to the world is constantly looking for what is possible in kind of a MacGyverish sort of way. And that's a quote from an article in Yahoo Tech, because cite your sources, right? Then a secondary option, Latimer AI, and I'll give you an opportunity to tell folks how we found out about Latimer AI and some context there, and then I'll share their definition for high agency.
So Latimer AI is founded by John Passmore. I actually shared a panel on the Black AI Think Tank. We mentioned that in our bonus episode, but it's like a forum where all, you know, innovators and just creators within the AI space join together and we just share knowledge. And he was one of the voices that I heard, and he created this product. But once we did, you know, some research on it, I was like, this is a really good tool. One of those culturally sensitive tools we like to highlight and show that, you know, there's more out there than just these mainstream areas, which I'm hoping this becomes mainstream. But you know, here's some more credible sources that you can use in your AI journey. So I'll pass it back to you so you can share with us their definition and we can kind of expound on it.
High agency refers to the capacity of individuals to act independently, make choices, and exert control over their lives and circumstances. It emphasizes empowerment, self-determination, and the ability to influence events and outcomes. In contexts related to personal development, high agency is often associated with resilience, proactive behavior, and a strong sense of personal responsibility. Key characteristics of high agency include decision-making. Individuals with high agency actively engage in decision-making processes, considering their options and the potential consequences of their choices. Responsibility. They take responsibility for their actions and recognize their role in shaping their own lives. Resilience. High agency individuals tend to bounce back from setbacks and view challenges as opportunities for growth. Autonomy. They value their independence and seek to control their own paths rather than relying solely on external influences. And advocacy. High agency often leads to advocacy for oneself and others, pushing for changes that reflect their values and beliefs. In discussions of social justice and equity, high agency is important as it relates to individuals' power to advocate for their rights and influence societal change. That was a pretty succinct context there.
To be honest, we just looked that up and that really hits our show on the mark for today. So all in all that means is you get stuff done. So just winds down to what I like to, they say high agency, I say personal agency. Because that resonates deeply with me, as Rebecca alluded to, you know, earlier, my little testimony. I feel like I just repeated it all the time, but for the most part, for people that do not know, our new listeners, which is everyone, I did lose my sight later on in life when I was 28. But that came with a plethora of other health challenges. So not only did I lose my sight within a 6-month window, but ended up on peritoneal dialysis, which required me to be on dialysis for 9 hours every single night. No breaks, no pauses, no nothing. And temporarily lost the ability to walk, but got all of that back. Long story short, after 3 transplants, 2 kidneys and a pancreas, one of those kidneys came from a very close friend of mine, Lisa Winkley. Shout out, Lisa. And and so where I see high agency, like, predominantly highlighted in my life is the second time after my first kidney was in rejection. I had gotten married, and a month after that, 2 months after that, sorry, started noticing some symptoms. So naturally, the husband and I thought, you know, we were pregnant, and, you know, it was like, whoa, who's trying to get pregnant this soon? But it was like, okay, you know, I've experienced the years at that time of like health challenges, but we were excited for life. And then we went to the doctor. They were like, no, you're not pregnant. Kidney rejection. So huge blow to the spirit and everything. And just over the course of 3-4 years, we experienced health challenges, getting back on dialysis, going through a pandemic. It was a mess. And the entire time I had to keep a 9-to-5 and a 5-to-9 because a girl needed healthcare. And, you know, I needed my husband, while he's taking care of me 100% of his time, my caregiver, he can't work because I'm going to the doctor once or twice a week, dialysis 3 times a week, and no job would pretty much hire him while he's trying to take care of me. So that money situation was on my shoulders, but we got it done. Ended up getting a kidney and just been hitting the ground ever since. So all in all, I am very familiar with high agency, to say the least. And it resonates deeply, but I know on a deeper level as Black women, it kind of hits a little bit harder. So I know you have a little bit to say about that.
Listen, I got a little bit, but I feel like I want to dive a little bit deeper on what you just said. So you identified kind of the path that you went on and your health struggles and everything else, but how does high agency play into it now? Like, what does it mean? Because you've identified before that you used to be very, very independent, self-sufficient, and then to go through a time where you were more dependent on folks. How did that impact you? How did you respond? And what does high agency look like? Well, maybe I shouldn't say look like. How does high agency present itself in your world now?
beforehand, the funny thing, if I can kind of intertwine it with my love story with my husband, when he met me, I was fresh out of college and he wanted to date, but I'm like, I haven't experienced life. How much nectar? But really, it was just hot girl summer. But really, no, I told him, I was like, listen, I am not good for you right now. Like, it's just, I was really focused on work. And I had, secured a job in LA. I was going to commute back and forth between LA and Dallas. I was a go-getter. Our first date, I was literally in Denver with my younger sister. She had secured an internship with EY. So I was just up there finishing a book. At that time I was in digital marketing. So I'm writing a book. I was doing speaking engagements and flew out from there to meet him on our first date and just kind of broke it down as far as like, I'm gonna leave my footprint in the world and, my dad, and I say this all the time and I gotta say it with a disclaimer, but my dad told us, my sister and I, like, don't you ever, depend on no man. You work for yourself. Even depend on me. I'm like, you my daddy, what you talking about? But he just always built this resiliency in us. And that quote that you mentioned earlier, a lot of people credit it to Helen Keller. I don't think my dad read a book or anything pertaining to Helen Keller. But the last thing I saw on the surgery table before I lost my sight completely was a smile from my dad and him telling me, even though, because at that time we knew that, I was going to lose my sight. So they were taking fluid from my eyes so that it could relieve pressure. So I knew it was going to be, the last time. So he said, even though you may have lost your sight, you have never lost your vision. So don't listen to, because the doctors were like, your life is going to change and blah, blah, blah. My dad was like, he told me after the fact, he was like, I would sit in the doctor's office with you and just cry silently. And if you know my dad, he is not a crier. So for him to say that, he was like, I would have to get it together. But he was like, I refuse to raise a daughter with this type of challenge and her not fight back. That's not the child that I raised. So high agency was, it's a way of life. It's what I know. It's what my sister knows. It's what we've seen in my mom. All the black women in our lives have it. All of the black men in our lives support it. So it's I want to say like it's a culturally relevant thing because we've had to do it. It's kind of intrinsic to who we are as a people. But I know when you start layering identities with mine's being a black woman with a disability, there's some significance in circumstance that evokes that out of you.
Interesting.
Did this just turn into an NPR pod?
Listen, tune in next time as we delve deeper.
Oh, that is eerie.
Hey, I think it's interesting. Sometimes I'm like, you know what, maybe I should have went first, because after you talk, I'm like, it feels insignificant to quibble or have qualms
No.
with different things. And I'm not saying that that's, I'm still going to talk. I'm still going to give my opinion, but I'm saying perspective, right? Like,
Yeah.
it definitely helps put things in perspective. Do you think the way you were raised, and it's not a commentary one way or the other, because I think a lot of times our parents do what they think is best for us. And so this isn't a commentary on whether I think it's right or wrong. But do you think, or maybe I shouldn't say but, because then that negates everything I just said. With that in mind, do you think the way you were raised, as far as being so independent and being self-resilient, was that an asset or a liability, or was it both, depending on the situation?
I'm gonna state a situation in the workplace, especially the political and social climate we're in now, definitely an asset. In marriage, definitely a liability. It's like, I got it, I could do it. And it's like, that's not what marriage is. You can, in my case, tend to cannibalize situations that are meant to kind of join y'all together in the journey. And look at it from a singular view. And I've had to learn that over the course of our, 6 years, because, my husband is used to strong women in his life. His mom is, very strong, his sisters, his aunts. And so he gives me the space to do that. But there are plenty of times where just my pure stubbornness, and it's like, girl, why are you trying to put together a modem? Like, It's stuff like that. But like I said, it's just circumstantial. You got to know when to turn that on and when to turn it off. And I think sometimes, and I hate to keep leaning into like the intersectionality, but it really is kind of, it doesn't leave room for vulnerability. And I think that is very necessary in leadership roles and capacity to kind of find that balance to, let people know that follow you, hey, there are times where we're going to have to kick this into gear. And, I can't walk beside you hand in hand, I'll support you, but if I hired you for something, I'm hiring you for your expertise. I don't want to hire you to tell you to do your job. So I would be looking for high agency.
Part of the reason I ask is because I see it in myself. And I'm like, am I alone? Because sometimes the very thing that gets a person to where they need to be is the thing that they need to shed to get to where they need to go. And so it's not to say, and when I say shed, not to say, okay, I'm getting rid of everything that I've learned before. No, but there still needs to be some evolution, right? So I think it's obvious that you are cared for and loved. And parents who do that, I think they know how cold the world can be, so they give you a coat. That is so necessary in the winter. My problem is that I was still trying to wear that coat in summertime.
Are you preaching?
Like, huh?
Are you preaching right now? I think you need to
Listen,
offer something.
hello, choir. And so it's just trying to find the balance between the two and knowing when to utilize something as an asset and when the very same thing is working against you as a liability and adjusting accordingly. So I won't belabor that point, but that's along the lines of what I was thinking, because there are, especially you'll see something posted on Instagram and someone will give advice and it is good. And then someone will comment in the comments, oh, well, no, this and the other. But the truth of the matter is, it depends. It's situational. Milk is good for babies. Okay, now you're ready for some meat, or if you're vegetarian, you're ready for some vegetables or whatever. But something can be right in one stage and then counteract or work against you in another. And so part of the blind spot for us intentionally, personally, and then also with others is to identify where we need to make those changes and where we need to make those adjustments. So to go back to kind of like those 5 points that were identified by Latimer for what high agency is or what it can include, one was decision making. So to reiterate there, that for the decision making part, it says individuals with high agency actively engage in decision making processes, considering their options and the potential consequences of their choices. For some people, and I think this runs the gamut, it doesn't matter how you identify where you are, socioeconomic status, or whatever, when you are in a position where you either genuinely can't or feel as though you can't make decisions about yourself, that leads to frustration. That frustration can present itself as just being an angry somebody. And because you can't control anything but your mood, and you decide to be a mean cuss to everybody. But then there are some people who take it the other way and they can't decide anything else, but they can decide how they treat other people. And so that's one way that they take ownership. Anyway, I think a lot of times when people get burnt out in their jobs, they're frustrated with their lives in general. It's because they don't feel like they can actively engage in the decision-making process for their life. Do you agree or?
Child, like one of my big pet peeves is indecision, like just indecisiveness. And I think kind of going back to my little testimony earlier, I had to make decisions. I had to make life decisions. I've had to make decisions when doctors were giving me expiration dates, like flat out giving me like, you have this much time. And wasn't the I didn't get the luxury of, I don't know, or, let me think about it. Like it was on the spot. Are you going to get this type of treatment? No. Or are you going to do this? No. Or, it was always felt coerced to make decisions because of circumstance, but I was like that beforehand. Very sure. I would try to, from a statistical standpoint, get my empirical data together, but get that gut instinct and move. And just kind of deal with the consequences later. Now, as a mature Christian now, you know, there are some things that I think about. There's people that come into play. I still make the decisions, but you know, I'm more aware of, let me be clear. I don't like that whole my truth and your truth and so forth, but I do understand my reality in the reality of everybody else. So, you know, when I'm making decisions, especially now being married and, you know, I have nieces, you know, nieces and a nephew now, and the world that they're going to grow up in, you know, is very cognizant of what decisions I make, but knowing that they need to see somebody like me make those decisions.
I think one is necessary to add the caveat. Neither of us are like psychologists or whatever else. I'm like, hey, this is the advice as to what you need to do with your life. Take it without any context or chase or anything like that. It's conversational of us working through our experience and feedback. I also think that's necessary to state because context is something that's missing from a lot of conversations that are had in general. Right. And part of the reason I say that is so the next part is for the five things was responsibility. You take responsibility for your actions and recognize your role in shaping your own life. So whether a person feels as though they're, because you mentioned the luxury of I don't know, whether the person has that or they don't. Whether it's, you know, make a decision now because they're life-changing, impacting decisions, or if it's deciding whether to order out or to cook or what have you. The decisions you make are your own, and there is some responsibility there. So as I was saying that, I was like, there are some, I think I'm overthinking it in that there are some decisions, though, that are made that people don't have responsibility over. But this specifically says responsibility of your actions and recognize your role in shaping your own life. So it's not taking into account other things that are without your control, it's the things that are within.
I have a statement, and I hope that I don't get in trouble for the statement, but it really does lean into responsibility of oneself. There were some comments made in reference to the autistic community this past week, and I felt, my personal opinion, this is not the opinion of the show or anybody, no, but I felt that there was some statements that were grossly irresponsible. And it was very one-dimensional. And it did not take into consideration the ramifications of what could come once those words, and because of the person in power, the decisions that they were making did not take into consideration everybody. It showed a very limited view. And that kind of goes back into what I was saying about decision making when we talk about our realities in the reality of all persons, you know, what that looks like. And so I cannot make a comment. I try not to make generalized comments. I try not to make statements that aren't fully vetted or understanding that doesn't hold empathy and compassion for others. Because once it leaves, it's not up to me to help you with interpretation. I'm only responsible for the delivery. And with that, I have an understanding that, like, okay, I have to package things that does not, you know, associate or insinuate any type of harm. And I just don't think we live in a world right now that holds that agency close to responsibility right now.
And even I know when I speak, sometimes, and I've said it earlier, I've done it earlier today where like my words jumble or I take a second and it's because I'm mindful of what I say and I want to be thoughtful with the words that I use. And even with that mindfulness, even with that thoughtfulness, sometimes I say things that when I listen back to it, I'm like, that was hella reckless. Pull that back. And that's where the responsibility does come in, though. So while what I articulate, if it comes across in a way that was not intended, I still have to take responsibility for my actions. And if it is out, if it is not in line, the way it's interpreted is not in line with the way I intended it, I think it's also my responsibility to address that, specifically to what you were saying. Like if it was, oh crap, that was, I misspoke. And I take ownership of what I said, or, and I didn't say it, but you would hope a person in leadership would say, this it was not my intent or whatever. But to consider the fact that some people especially when statements are made, you would think that it was reviewed. There was multiple people involved, and then it was still said. And then once the reception is, I'm like, oh crap, maybe I'm now I'm seeing it through eyes that I haven't seen it before. I'm hearing it through ears I hadn't heard through before. Let me adjust. And so for people to not and then double down, I think is telling. Because then it's to what your point is of empathy. Does that not exist or is that not there? Do they not care? And I don't know if that relates more to responsibility in general and maybe not high agency overall, but I think it's interesting because a lot of people will profess to be, oh, I am this, that, and the other. This, and they use the buzzwords. We need more high agency employees and this, that, and the other. But are you a high agency leader? And if so, what does that mean? Here are the characteristics, here are the things that are included in that.
Leadership is an entire podcast in itself, but we are going to leave that there. But two snaps, everything that you said in reference to responsibility.
I do. And then for resilience, high agency individuals tend to bounce back from setbacks and view challenges as opportunities for growth. Sometimes, and I've heard this by a couple of people, like, listen, I'm tired of being resilient. I'm tired of having to bounce back.
Child.
And
Yeah.
it's such an interesting position to be in. I'm glad that I can bounce back because life happens, whether I want it to or not. Whether I want things to go exactly my way doesn't mean that it will. So I am grateful for the fact that when things don't always go my way or the way I would, not even just my way, just a good way, please. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't have to chart the course, but if it could not have amble, bramble and bush or whatever the heck, I would definitely appreciate that. But to be in a position to be resilient is good. I just wish I didn't have to be all the time.
So, I told you maybe about week, 2 weeks ago, I have just started kind of starting over with my walk with God and everything. And so I've been reading my Bible from like the Eastern and Jewish lens. So everything that I read, I'm just like, I've been doing this wrong. Like everything about my faith has been wrong. But what I am starting to realize about resiliency, yes, and how we look at it from like a physical construct or even an emotional, it's like something happened to you and you just kind of got up and just kept going, and or somebody threw a rock at you, or somebody slapped you and you just turned the other cheek and just keep going. And I'm like, okay, God, nobody just wants to get beat up all day, like it's just that's a it's a lot. And so the more that I'm like reading just, just different sources and everything, and kind of spending a lot of reflective time with myself, the more I'm realizing that resilience leans more into just peace than anything. To go through something, and not to say that you don't have like a visceral response, but to experience something and still kind of be anchored in, it's bad, but I'll be fine. Like just, one of the things that when I was in a hospital that I kept telling Rich, I said, hey, let's plan for a vacation. And he was just, how could you plan for a vacation? And you don't know what life is. We don't even know if you're gonna make it. And he was just like petrified, understandably so. Your new bride is now facing like life, and and you're trying to figure out what to do. But I told him, I said, if you give me something to where I can cast, my net out toward, that gives me something to live outside of these four walls in this hospital. And I was like, that's how I beat this illness. That's how I heal quicker. That's how, I get my bounce back, is because it's bringing joy to do something far beyond myself. That's what gives me, that gives me peace. Planning for something enjoyable, planning something with you, that's peace. And if I have peace going through, everything, every time like a doctor gives a bad report, I still get through it. And we'll just take one day at a time. But resiliency just look, the construct of it looked different to me. Now, back then it was just, we just head down pushing through. I was planning trips trying to, get his mind off of it, and at the same time just worried. And you can't do both. But I'm saying now, being, gone through years, of challenges, not just health, but professional, personal, all just spiritual, all those aspects. What I know resilience to be is just being fortified in peace through a situation.
See, that's good. And amen. I agree with you. It's just in the definition right there. It says bounce back from setbacks and view challenges as an opportunity to grow. Yes, there's a positive side. There is the bounce back and there's opportunity for growth. I agree with that. Amen to peace. I don't want the setback, is what I'm saying. I don't want the challenge. If I'm being a buck, if I'm being 100%. Now,
I
I
have something.
agree. Okay, go
So
ahead.
if there is a bow and arrow, if you do not stretch that arrow back, quote unquote, a setback, and if it is not a deep stretch back, which might be a very big setback, how will it propel forward?
See, but I get that intellectually, and I understand it, and I can appreciate it.
Sounds so good on paper.
And when it's like turn to your neighbor and say, pull me back. Or whatever. That's fine. I can vibe with that. And I'm not opposed to it. I understand it and I agree. I'm just saying, if I were to create my own world and if I were to have everything that I want myself, I would not give me any setbacks because I don't like them. Will I deal with them? Yes. Will I bounce back? Yes. Will I look at the challenge as an opportunity to grow? Yes. But I would prefer to not have to.
So you would have nonstop sunshine,
Yes.
but then that will turn your fertile ground into a desert.
Listen, I didn't say that I wouldn't have I that this is an ideal world. I don't have consequences to actions, okay? In this, I would just want what I want and it would be whatever I want in that moment. It wouldn't always be sunshine, honestly. It would be whatever I want it to be in that moment. Now, I know that I don't live in this fictional world, but part of me being able to have that peace and to view the challenge as an opportunity is to also be honest with myself.
Absolutely.
And with, because if I say, hey, yeah, no, everything's perfect, everything ain't perfect. I'd be lying to
It
you
sucks
and
right now.
myself, huh?
Life sucks right now. It just sucks it utterly.
Like a Hoover. That mug is sucking up everything.
Like a Dyson, man.
Strong. What was it that wind tunnel action? Whatever. It's sucking strong. And I think being honest with myself is then what clears the path for me to be like, all right, now how do I pivot? Like even with us recording this conversation, this episode today, we started on one platform and it wasn't going the way we needed it to. That sucks because it's time, it's energy, you took all the stuff to get ready. So, but now they're like, all right, pivot. And then we use another platform and then we keep going. So I'm not saying to say, because there are some people who are stuck in the complaining phase or in the woe
And
is
I
me,
was there.
this ain't
I
that.
was there.
Right. And I understand it, but it's not, ne it's okay if you have that phase. It's just, all right, if you want to stay there, if you don't want to be actively engaged in your decision-making process and assess your options, if you don't want to take responsibility for your actions, if you don't want to bounce back, then that's fine. If you don't want to have high agency and yield your life and your decisions to other people in the world that is, you can do that. I don't know what joy there is in that or what you accomplish in that, but I do still think it's necessary to say, hey, I can acknowledge that this isn't what I want it to be, but now, what do I do to make it what I do need or what I do want? Because sometimes it's not even what I want, it's what I need in the moment. And then you adjust and you carry on. And I think it's necessary to articulate that you do that because some people will see other people and they're like, oh my gosh, everything is always perfect. Your hair is always done. Your makeup is always on. You're always smiling. And then they set themselves up for some unachievable, perfect level of perfection that does not exist. None of us are perfect. We are being perfected. We have a goal. We have a ideal that we're working towards. But I think it also helps people on their walk, journey, whatever, when people are honest.
You just need some time with resiliency.
Okay.
I'm joking.
Let me bounce back to the other two things.
No, I'm joking. But yes, absolutely. Like, if people that know me that listen to this podcast, they're going to look at this kumbaya joker. But like, no, seriously, it took a long time, a long lesson. decade plus lesson to kind of get where I am. And even if a situation come up right now, I'll be like, yo, this sucks. I'm gonna complain about it. I'm gonna go lay in the bed. I'm gonna go watch Bob's Burgers or Abbott Elementary, rub my feet together, go to sleep, wake up, and
Right.
go deal. So I get it.
Yeah. That's it. It's debate then deal. But either way, I do think resilience is good, and I am resilient.
Yes, you are.
So it's just sometimes I wish I didn't have to be.
But we are, so.
But I'm grateful that I am. So that's the other thing too. It's a balancing act. Sometimes I wish I didn't have to be, but I'm grateful that I am because I have seen people who don't bounce back. They something hits them and they fall and they stay down for the count. Like it makes me think of Rocky. They're like 10, and you see them just like looking 9, and their eyes are all
Like, can
blurry
you
and
get to
stuff.
one already? Just count me out.
And then they get the first rope. They're like about to pull themselves up, and then they fall back down. Yeah, or whatever the heck. I still I hop back up. My face might be a little bit bloodied and my eye might be swollen, but I'm still down to finish the fight.
There you go.
Autonomy. Value your independence and seek to control their own paths rather than relying solely on external influences.
That's really challenging for a Christian, but
How so?
yeah. This is a little rough. But this whole thing of I have a problem, and this ain't even trying to be like a religious pod at all. I'm just,
He's been talking through you strong today, but carry on.
man, and I'm like trying to
Because
like,
Easter was so close.
trying to, but and I don't want people who, might not be believers to not listen, share your experiences, just my belief, I do not want to impose. That is not what I'm getting at. This is just if you want to know my methodology, how I think, what I'm anchored at, this is my source. So you can kind of check me versus, my sources and be like, okay, is she legit? And you can have your judgments and opinions on me. But I lost my train of thought. Give it back to me.
Autonomy. We're talking
There it
about
is.
value and independence.
There it is. This whole idea of manifestation, it just kind of like, I'm gonna manifest this, I'm gonna manifest that. And I'm like, y'all, the key word in manifest is man. You're talking to something, and I pull from my little testimony again because I saw it a lot. Quote unquote, I saw. But no, dealt with a lot of people sick just like me, worse off than me. If we could have just manifested healing, it would have came, right? It's like, I'm healed. Take this IV out of my arm. I'm walking out of here. It just does not work. And they're like, no, you gotta have positive thoughts and do this. And I'm like, listen, y'all. What I can do is have faith. And at the same time, the autonomy that I do have, the responsibility that I do have, the resiliency that I do have, the decisions that I have to make, those can be grounded in something and keep me going. Now, for me, manifestation looks like me in alignment with God, and He allows these things to happen. Those other, four attributes that we're talking about for high agency, these are things that my free will does. Like, I am responsible. Everybody is responsible for doing. You have to make decisions. You cannot go through life without making a decision. You got to be responsible. You just can't be out here just willy-nilly, just, doing things left and right and no have no responsibility and just not thinking of any other consequences. There's you have to have resiliency. You're just gonna get beat down. I mean, you can be resilient moving up, or you just gonna be beat down and that's it. You're just down for the count. But here, just for autonomy, we are our own person. We have our character, our set of morals and beliefs. Our experiences that are specific to us, even if you are with somebody or if you're in a family unit or with your friends, it's you, and you have to make, you have to go through life and do life, and it's how you do it. And you can do it with people. I look at autonomy different. For me, before I got married, before just a reconciliation with my family and everything, I was just out, just autonomy. I want my independence. I'm gonna do this. You know, I'm gonna drive my own car. I'm in my own place. I'm making my own money. I'm traveling. It was me. It was very self-centered on me. And now I treasure autonomy because I lost it with losing my sight. I had to depend on others. But having that communal aspect makes me appreciate autonomy. It brings value to things that I can do by myself. But I always know where my source, and that's a big S, where that comes from. So, you know, you got people out here doing things, not thinking of others. They're taking that autonomy. I think they're kind of taking it and using it in bad ways. But you know, I ain't out here judging. Do whatever, you know, do whatever, but there will be consequences. And I very much lean more into communal aspects and what your personal role is, that high agency that everybody should, you know, bring into the bigger picture. It took me a while to get to that point. That was a working definition.
No, that's good. I think sometimes you start talking, you work through it for yourself as well. There were a couple things. One, there could be a whole episode, the whole podcast could be about manifestation, and we could talk about the different nuances and everything there. I think it's when we mentioned context before, I think that applies here as well because there are various definitions, right? And one of the ones that I just saw from, what is this, mentalhealth.com, it says, bringing specific desires, goals, or outcomes into reality through focused thoughts, beliefs, and actions. There are some people who just do the beliefs. There are some people who just do the thoughts of like, oh, well, if I think this hard enough, then it'll be. So the conversation could be had there about the context of it, but I won't belabor that point. And then for autonomy, one of the things that as part of this, the definition, at least that Latimer provided, is, to seek control of your own path rather than relying solely on external influences. And I think the key word for me there is solely, because I agree that I am definitely more community, work with your village, squad, et cetera. How can we help each other? But then there are some folks who almost use that as an excuse or not excuse, more of,
Pick up your weight now.
Well, it's like a thing to, I don't have to do this because someone else will. Or there are some things, though, that you, ma'am, I feel like, as an example, there are so many things that you could say, nah, I'm not going to do it. Why? Because I can't say, let somebody else. But you don't do that. Even though community is important to you, and even though you do have a great community and village around you of people who support you, there's a lot that you do on your own. So I think it's when people are so independent to where they are, no man is an island unto himself. Like even that, I can do all. And they deify themselves as though they are the answer to any and everything and they need no person. That's when I think it becomes toxic, harmful, whatever. Insert actual psychology, psychiatry reference there. But there is value in doing what you can, when what each person can to control their own path and utilizing whatever ability they have for themselves. And even then, as I started to say that, I'm like, we are, some of us are differently abled. So I don't mean to say, I don't know what I mean to say there in an appropriate way, but there is some level of autonomy that we can achieve. And I think we would desire to have in general. You know what? I think next time, I would love in a future episode or something if we were to have an expert speak to this specifically. And because sometimes I feel like, and that's the benefit of conversation. And people who are listening to this, it's a conversation between friends and you're being invited in as a friend to participate. I am not asserting expertise in this area. It's more so I'm trying to figure something out and I'm talking through it. So that we can figure it out together.
Friend.
So anyway, and then last on the list there is advocacy. High agency often leads to advocacy for oneself and others, pushing for changes that reflect their values and beliefs. I think that's so key and important. What are your thoughts?
It's funny. Everything just aligned perfectly today. Like, we were just like, oh, what tool can we use? And we're like, we use Latimer. And now it just perfectly aligned with the whole theme of just high agency. But it's funny because today on LinkedIn, I had posted that, like, as I mentioned in our bonus feature, that I don't like speaking. I don't like doing any type of speaking engagements or, what we're doing right now. That's why I'm more comfortable in doing conversations. But I was like, you know what? After this weekend, just kind of reflecting and taking in everything that's kind of going on in the world, it was like, okay, Tiffany, do you not like it because of your fear of perception, or what is it? And it really was kind of a I can't move in fear. I can't move in insecurity, especially with everything that I've been able to accomplish through that autonomy, through that responsibility, through making decisions, and just active resiliency. I gotta advocate. I need to speak. And I used to, everybody is like, oh, I want to get a podcast, or I got something to say, and I'm just gonna start doing self-help videos on Instagram. And y'all can keep that. Y'all not getting that from me. However, I will speak on injustice and represent marginalized communities because I check a lot of boxes. But because I do have that autonomy and the ability and the community to kind of go out there, I can't sit back. I can't be silent right now. And I know that comes with some, there are some fears, that I do have, like, oh, child, what if the powers that be kind of turn against you and all of that stuff? But, if nobody speaks up, nothing gets resolved. And so just a little platform, the little access, little connections, the collaborations I got, I'm like, hey, I'm gonna just go out here and we just gonna talk, and we're gonna try to make some ideas and turn them into some actions and try to help some people and advocate. So just tying up all five characteristics of high agency and kind of putting it to good use. So that's kind of how I view it.
Yeah. And we're on the same page. There's definite, as you mentioned, like, feel the fear and do it anyway. When I turned 25, no, 24 is when it started, of my like bucket list birthdays, of instead of waiting until the end of my life to then check things off or whatever else, I was like, hey, each birthday, either by the birthday or sometime during that year, I wanted to do something that I've always wanted to do. So I'm not waiting to live until, sometime or whatever
Love
else.
that.
Thank you. And so for my 25th birthday, I went skydiving. I am afraid of heights.
Really?
Yes, I'm afraid of heights, but skydiving always looked cool. And now sometimes I think we should listen to our fears, not to say that our listen to them and then they have the final say, but listen to them in that, why am I afraid of this? And assess, because there's some fears are healthy. And I'm like, okay, I don't want to die from steak poisoning, so I'm not going to let one just bite me.
Fears are tools.
Right. How do you use them? But for the fact that skydiving was something that interested me, it's something that I wanted to do. And the only thing standing in between me and achieving what I wanted to do was my fear. Feel the fear and do it anyway. And that's what I said, like right before I jumped out of the plane, or I was jumped out of the plane because I did it tandem. Which we'll talk about this on another episode too, potentially. I'll mention it and then you can bring it up whenever you think it fits. The man I was strapped to was very attractive. That's neither here nor there, but I do
If
feel a
I'm
little bit
gonna
more
die,
comfortable. I was
I'm
like,
gonna die with you.
let's go. take me
No,
with
that is
you,
so, I'm like
but
beat up that you did that. Like, okay, because I don't have a fear of heights, obvious, can't see them. So, like, I don't want to do skydiving because I'm like, once you do skydiving, what else will you do? Nothing. So I'm like saving that.
yeah.
That is like a bucket list. It's just like, what would you do after that? But man, that's pretty dope. You're pretty dope, lady.
Listen, thank you. I be faking it till I make it, like along the way. And sometimes I don't know where things come from. It's just if I want to do it and it's in my heart to do, I'm gonna do it. It doesn't mean
My
that we're not,
agency.
cause, ma'am, thank you. I've assessed. I'm involved in my decision making. I'm resilient
Baby.
if I. That's why you have a
Resilient.
parachute.
There you go. Listen, come
Okay.
on. Tie it
Yeah.
all together.
Anyway, I say all that to say that just because we're doing a thing doesn't mean we have all the answers, doesn't mean that we have no concerns or no fears. It's you assess and then you decide. And I'm glad that our decision has led us to the blind spot and us having this journey, I guess, one with another, and then also with the folks who listen and join along.
So, tying up this show, my agency is how we got to MacBook and a mic to create the podcast.
Well, so we barely touched on MacBook and a mic. Where does that come from? Why are you saying MacBook and a mic?
MacBook and a mic, because once I finally made the decision that you can, walk through our process through the bonus show that we keep bringing up of, okay, I'm finally to do this show. Pretty much the next call with Rebecca was, I just bought a MacBook. It's like, I got a brand new MacBook and I bought a brand new mic and I'm ready. I just went all in and researched it, purchased it, redid my office, got a backdrop, used AI. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, like I just started going for it and just putting that high agency into good use. And that's how we ended up with, with a MacBook and a mic. Like, we're gonna figure out how to do this podcast thing and, prayerfully, some resources come down the line and we can kind of, bigger production and stuff and give you better quality. But I was like, we just gonna start. And that's where all of these, five characteristics just came in. I made the decision. I was responsible and I got the equipment from it. Resiliency, I was like, hey, I'm gonna do it. Feel the fear, do it anyways, just like you mentioned. And then just the autonomy. My husband was like, I was driving him up a wall. I'm like, all right, we're gonna put this here. I'm gonna do this. I need padding for the wall. I just went in and then, advocacy. I'm like, we're doing this podcast for other people for, multiple reasons, but it's for people to benefit from. So I put all of those things into practice and we got MacBook and a mic, which should be a t-shirt. I feel like it needs to be something.
Okay. We might have some licensing things. Maybe I need to put a K in the Mac or something.
Ew, I forgot. They real, yeah,
Yeah.
Apple real strong about that, but
Yeah. We'll work it out.
yeah, I figured out.
And so one of the things I know we wanted to highlight some of the tools, since some of them, the ones that we use specifically, you identified, I'll definitely kick it to you to share with the folks.
Sure, this is the segment of the show that we like to call Straight BS. The blind spot. So one of the tools we like to highlight, so if it was in your blind spot, it's no longer and you can use it now, is 11 Labs. And basically what we used it for, what I use it for, was voice cloning. So if you are looking for a speech to text software, anything that can like read out documents or PDFs or anything that you need read out to you, you can go to 11 Labs. We'll add, the link in our show notes. But how we used it for the show, if you listen to our wonderful intro, there was a process. So I used a tool in order to find royalty-free music. And once I got the song, I based it off of our mood, our personalities, what vibe we were trying to get. I had my song locked in. And so I said, ooh, I want it to sound professional, like somebody introducing us, like the Jimmy Fallon show or something. So I went to 11 Labs. I picked a voice based off of gender and age and tone and setting, and all of these, areas and what do you call it, criteria or whatever for what we were looking for. Finally got the voice and played around, typed in how we wanted the intro. And what you heard was, yeah, basically coming up with the voiceover. And so I thought about it. Because Rebecca was doing so much in the production aspect, I was like, "Hey, I want to do this part. I want to do the intro, and I want to do it by myself." And so I looked up tools. I kind of went over to GarageBand, and it was like being really funky with the file formats. And I was like, "Look, nobody has time for this. What is a way?" And so while listening to another podcast, I was like, "You know what? I'm just gonna see if ChatGPT, T could do this." So I used ChatGPT 4.0, and the first thing I did, I said, you are an audio engineer. So it was like, cool. What do you want me to do? And so I told it, I said, hey, I want to put this voiceover on top of this song. I uploaded those files and it did it. And I said, oh, okay. Move the voiceover 5 seconds after the intro and then cut it off after the voiceover 7 seconds. So then it gave me that, and I was like, oh, it's actually doing it. So finally, I was like, hey, what do you call the audio, terminology for when you want to turn the volume down on the backtrack to listen to the voiceover clearly. And it was like, it's called ducking. So I was like, cool. Fade in here, do the ducking part, and then fade, fade out, give me the intro. And sure enough, it did exactly that. I downloaded, gave me a link to download the track, got it, sent it over to Rebecca, and that's what you heard pretty much here. So I was a producer, voiceover actor, and audio engineer, literally in a matter of about an hour, just trying to figure out and just trial and error. And I would encourage anybody. I just used 11 Labs for voice cloning of my own voice for a presentation. If I ever did a webinar or, any type of Zoom presentation, you will hear my screen reader, and it's really distracting. So in this sense, I wrote out my script. I uploaded it up to 11 Labs, gave it a mini 30-second preview of my voice, just, saying random things. And that's what I used to do my PowerPoint presentation. I used that audio track that it generated from my 30-second clip. And I use it for everything now. So, yeah, that's 11 laps.
Ideal. Thank you for sharing. I think I've already added enough things to make this considerably longer than we initially intended for the episode to be. But in future episodes, I would like to do a, not necessarily a rebuttal, but a consideration of or an addressing of people's concerns from there, right? Like, oh, but you're using your voice, and what is this? And are we, how does AI? It's taking over the world and all the things. And so there are different concerns that people have. There's so much, with great power comes great responsibility. And there's both two sides to every coin. And I think it would be good, one, to hear your feedback. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to email us at info@theblindspotpod.com. And we would love to address those. And then one, we can either, if enough of them are accumulated, amassed, or whatever, we can address them in one episode and we address all those things. Or as we hear them, we can include them and address one off as we continue. But with that, I would like to say, hey, I appreciate you, Tiffany, and also
Me.
the listener. Thank you for the time, for listening to us and having this conversation. I'm definitely interested to know if you have any thoughts as far as, did we completely miss the mark? Do you agree or disagree with how Latimer summarized high agency? Or is not necessarily an agreement or a disagreement, it's just an add-on, or you want to participate in the conversation? Again, feel free to reach out. And that email again is info@theblindspotpod.com. And that's all for me, folks. Tiffany, any parting words?
No, I thought Latimer was a wonderful tool. Shout out again. Do you have our closing joke?
Okay, sure. Yeah, I'll give a joke, a little kiki. So with Lent, one of the things that I gave up or wasn't consuming was alcohol. Not to say that I was a lush or anything, but there was no alcohol consumption during Lent. So I thought this joke was appropriate. How does a computer get drunk?
I don't know. How does it?
It takes screenshots. But
I am way too tickled. That
thank
was
you.
good.
Thank
That
you.
was
And it
good.
sounded
Look
like you tried to fight the laugh, but then
at
it like
you. I
over
did. I didn't want to just burst out in the mic with
it.
that. Yeah. You that was good. Look at you.
I do. Thank you.
Yeah.
Da
All
da
right, y'all.
da da da.
Well, have a great week. Hit us up.
All right. Thank you. Bye.